The World My Wilderness by Rose Macaulay, read by Claire Corbett, for Naxos Audiobooks. The world my wilderness, its caves my home, its weedy wastes the garden where I roam, its chasmed cliffs my castle and my tomb. Anon. Chapter 1. The villa, facing south, stood above the little town and port, on the slope between the sea and the Forêt de Surède. It was strawberry pink, with green shutters shaped like leaves, and some green bogus windows and shutters with painted ladies looking out of them. But most of the windows were real, and had balconies full of shrubs and blue pots and drying bathing suits and golden cucumbers in piles. There was a flat terraced roof with vine trellises on it, and outside the villa stone steps climbed up to the roof. The garden was crowded with shrubs and flowers and orange and lemon trees and pomegranates and magnolias and bougainvilleas and vines. A veranda ran across the south front of the house. Behind it were the long, cool, shady rooms with whitewashed walls and floors of small, glossy, dark red tiles spread with bright striped mats. The walls of the largest room were painted with a dado of sea and creatures of the deep, such as dolphins, tritons, mermaids eating honeycomb, seahorses, and gaily striped fish. There were a few modern paintings. The most imposing was a large nude who was a French mayor, reclining on a green sofa with a blue plate of strawberries in his hand. His flesh tones were superb. This nude, whose name was Charles Michel, had been the builder and first owner of the Villa Fraise, but was now dead. So was his son Maurice, the second owner, who had collaborated mildly but prosperously from 1940 to 1945, and had thereafter been found drowned in the bay, leaving the Villa Fraise in the possession of his English wife, an artist who had painted the pictures in the room and had lived with him in it since the fall of France had left her stranded with her 10-year-old daughter, a collier. Owing to having collaborated, however mildly, the Michels had lived quite well and had been able to ameliorate also the lives of many of their neighbours, including some of the local Maquis. But the Maquis, a thankless tribe, had held this against them when the hour struck and the liberating troops swept into Provence. The Villa Fraise was under a cloud. After its owner's death, his widow had been spared retribution, owing to her having more than once sheltered escaped Allied prisoners waiting to cross the Pyrenees. And to the well-meant, if somewhat jejune activities of her daughter and stepson in the juvenile fringes of the Maquis. Still, as relict of the collaborating Monsieur Michel, who was suspected, unjustly, of having betrayed fugitives and resistance members to the Vichy police in Perpignan in return for petrol and other conveniences, Madame Michel had found herself in an embarrassing position. Fortunately, she was not easily embarrassed. A large, handsome, dissipated, detached and idle woman, more interested in classical literature and the pleasures of the gaming table than in painting, which she found demanded more application than she was prepared in these days to exert. She was inclined to lounge her days away, playing any game for any stakes with anyone at hand, idly translating Greek comedies into French, playing with her infant son, or merely reading for pleasure. On this mid-April afternoon, she lay in a hammock in the garden, among oleanders and statues, while the mother of Maurice Michel, who was paying a visit to the Fraise, sat erect and black-weeded on the veranda, netting. Madame Michel was thin and patriotic. She had curled white hair and a tight mouth. The generous, ample curves, the lounging ease, the brightly coloured clothes, the absorption in literature and in games of chance, of the bereaved mistress of her son, she found exasperating. As his mistress, she still regarded her daughter-in-law, since she had a husband still alive in London. And more than exasperating, that Maurice had left her the Fraise,